Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Aru with Lions at the Gate, and you are watching Good Company.
Hey, guys, my name's Scott Boling, and today we're with Aru Luster.
What's up?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Awesome, man. Just got off the flight. It was like a two-hour flight from Denver, and I was hungry. You had some food over there. I had some pizza, and then I was like looking at the chicken wings, and I was like, "Should I do it? Should I do the chicken wings?" Yeah. And I had to, so I took one, and I was like, "Man, these are good." And now I got like, you know, don't zoom in or anything because I got like chicken in my teeth right now.
There was nothing healthy in the selection. I said, "Well, we got celery. That's good.
Green."
Yeah. Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, maybe I'll have a piece of
celery. Some afterwards.
Yeah, some more chicken wings, yeah.
I told Aru he needs to write his name on the side of the chicken, the box, you know, whatever. And you, how was your flight, man? You flew down here? And you got a killer rate? I don't know. We had to talk about that, but...
Yeah, I mean, I'm good at finding cheap flights. So I found, like, a really good price for the flight. And the flight was nice. I mean, it was like a two-hour flight. I just loaded up my iPad with some... what's that show? American Horror Story.
Oh, nice.
And watched two episodes and I was here.
Hey, that's perfect, dude. And you're the second person on the show from Lions at the Gate. And Christian.
Yeah.
Brought
his
daughter. That was awesome.
That was a great interview.
I wish I had you guys together, man. That'd be the goal.
Yeah, we should. Get us all down here.
Yeah, here's the...
Just say free chicken wings and I'm sure all the guys would be more than willing to come down.
You guys would be fighting over them.
Yeah.
Here's your band. I love it. Can you talk about some of the other members? My goal is to get all these guys on the show.
All right. So, I mean, Steven, yeah. Diego, and Christian knew each other for a while. I mean, Steven met them at, I think it was a Cradle of Filth show, but I'm not sure. Mm. And Steven played on Christian's solo album.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the acoustic.
Yeah, the acoustic album. Yeah. And that's how they met. And Steven and Diego already kind of had the idea of jamming together. And it was like after all of the, the legal stuff, I wasn't even sure exactly like what I wanted to do musically. Like I know we had talked about maybe doing something together, but at the time I think we were more set on like continuing, you know, maybe winning the El Nino name and continuing that way. But after we decided, you know, to do it the way that we did, Diego called me up and he said, "Hey man, we're recording an album in 10 days. And I was like, "All right, let's do this." And at first I was like kind of like in a place where I wasn't exactly sure that I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
But I was like, "Well, I better try it because I don't want to like, you know, if it is, I mean, it could be something cool, so mm-hmm. I might as well just give it a try." And so I went down there. Diego and Steven already arranged Kyle O'Dell because I think Steven knew him from North Carolina because that's where Steven's from. And after a couple days, like we were writing songs and everything was just going really good. And then by the we did it in two 10-day sessions. So the first session was 10 days and it went really well. And by the time we were done with it, I was like, "Yeah, you know what? I'm really liking this. I'm really happy about it." And then about a month later, we did the second 10-day session. Mm. And by the end of that one, I was even like way more invested. Like that was like, I was like really, really pleased with it. Yeah. And then we started getting the songs back. And once we started like, you know, it was like they sounded really cool as works, you know, not finished products, but they were just kind of like what we were working on, and all the vocals hadn't been mixed in and there was other things, elements that hadn't been mixed in yet, but it still sounded cool. But once I started hearing like the finals, I was like, "Wow, this is actually something special."
So when you were writing songs with them, did you have like ideas of guitar riffs you were going to add when they asked you to join? I mean, were like, I mean, were you playing a lot of guitar before they called you?
I was doing some like random stuff. Like sometimes bands hire me to produce them or even like ghostwrite for them. Like I think I was doing some ghostwriting for a band. And so I was pretty actively playing and writing music. And I had some material that I had actually written for someone else. And they didn't end up using it. So like when we were submitting ideas, I was like, well, I got all this stuff. And they're like, yeah, that's pretty cool.
You know? That's cool, man.
Yeah. So a lot of it got really reworked. It wasn't like anything like the original ideas that I had written for someone else. So they definitely have our stamp on them. And that's the way it was. It was just like kind of everybody just bringing ideas from that they had written, and Kyle just kind of made it all gel and happen.
Where'd you guys record at again?
Diego's house.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's got like a little studio in the ground level of his house.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
that's cool, man. Before that, you were in Machine Head.
Yep.
This album, dude, was amazing.
Thank you so much. Game,
I mean, how did you, I know, like, how did you meet Rob? Was Rob your connection to this?
Yeah, I mean, the crazy thing is, like, I don't know if a lot of people know, but I've known Rob way before Machine Head. And it goes back to the, like, the Bay Area thrash days.
Like Violence?
Yeah. I knew him when he was in Violence, and I saw Violence several times. Because the way that I got into music was I had a band. I started playing in a band when I was in Las Vegas. Mm. And I was about 16 years old. And we got to the point where we, you know, this is pretty much what we can do here in Vegas. So at the time, the Bay Area thrashing was where like the center of metal of the world. So we're like, we got to move to the Bay Area. So when we moved out there, that's when we met Rob, and we met like, you know, a lot of the other guys in the you know, classic Bay Area thrash bands. And when Violence, I think Rob left Violence and started Machine Head.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My roommate at the time, I was roommates with a good friend of mine that passed away. His name is Tony Costanza.
Mm-hmm.
He was the original drummer for Machine Head.
Wow.
And,
okay.
Yeah, and he also played for Crowbar, and I can't remember, but he played for some other bands.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah. So like most of Burn My Eyes was written with my roommate Tony at the time. So I was as they were writing the album, he'd bring the practices home, and I'd hear all the songs being made, and like, then he kind of.
Oh, that's so cool, dude.
Yeah, he had like a anxiety thing where he couldn't continue. So then they got Chris Kontos.
Oh, okay.
And so I knew Rob from way back in the day, and
were you in any bands at the time? Like,
yeah, it was a band called The Horde of Torment. Mm-hmm. And it was like just like we started out kind of like more Sepultura-ish, but then we kind of started adapting the Bay Area like metal sound, so we kind of sounded like that Exodus Testament.
What year was this, man? It's like 89.
Oh,
89. Well, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can you find it? Like any of this?
Yeah,
music?
You can. Yeah, totally. Like, it's on YouTube.
It's on Spotify or YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah, you can find it on YouTube.
Oh, man. I
just look
up
The Horde of Torment, and it's just like, you know, some teenagers playing some thrash metal.
And so over the years, you kind of kept in touch with Rob, you know, I mean, because this album was what? You guys started recording, what, 98 or 99?
Yeah, we started recording that in 98. But yeah, I knew Rob since like 89.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, yeah, and
I love that you guys recorded in Indigo Ranch, right?
Indigo Ranch, yep.
Dude, I swear they need to make like a documentary about that whole
scene.
They
totally should.
It would be so good.
I mean, that's kind of the birthplace of nu metal when you think about it. Because that first Korn record, the first couple Korn records were done there.
Vanilla Ice?
Yeah, Vanilla Ice.
Amen. Amen guys were on there.
Limp Bizkit.
Yeah.
Amen. Even you know, later, like at the drive-in,
there's so many
Glassjaw.
Glassjaw, wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
And when you guys were recording, it's so interesting that Slipknot, you know, I've heard Rob talk about Slipknot doing their first album there. I mean, did you guys get to
hang out with Slipknot?
Yeah, did you hang out with them? I mean, was it, Because were they recording after this was done, or because it was at the same time?
It was at the same time.
That's wild.
Yeah. So
like Ross worked all the time.
You know? Ross was kind of like, he was so hot at the moment. Like he was the hottest producer on the planet for metal. Mm. And, you know, sometimes when you're in that position, you just put too much on your plate at once. Mm-hmm. And he had us, he was finishing up our record. He had to start the Slipknot record, their first record. So there was an overlap.
Yeah.
And it turned into where because we were actually living, we were staying at Indigo Ranch while this was happening. And Slipknot, since, you know, they were a baby band, they were, you know, they had to stay somewhere else.
Yeah.
And so.
Who knew they would like take over like the world?
Yeah.
The metal?
No, I mean, nobody knew. And so we would record till about 6 o'clock at night, mm-hmm. and then the Slipknot guys would start showing up.
So they worked late.
Yeah, they had the evening shift.
Oh, that's so cool. I remember Corey was telling me that you guys like hooked them up with van shoes.
Yeah.
And he told me that in my interview. I think he said that, and Rob brought it up too, about like, now that meant the world to him. You know, that he said he didn't have any money, man, and you guys gave him some vans. I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, because we had a Vans endorsement at the time, so I'm sure they just let, you know, they talked to Vans and said, hey, there's this new band called Slipknot, and, you know, we need some shoes.
When you joined the band, I mean, did you know you're going to be working with Ross? I mean, did you have input on that, or was it like, we're going to use Ross? That's was that like Rob's idea, or like?
Yeah, it was already how, like, it was Ross already planned. Picked.
Oh, it was, okay.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I was coming into the band, and the only thing I had done before that is local bands, mm-hmm. and I really didn't have much say so at all in any of the business stuff or like choice of producer or mm-hmm. or any of that. But I did, like, once I got into the band, like, I wanted to show that I was worthy, basically.
Yeah.
So I wrote a bunch of ideas, and most of them ended up getting used on the Burning Red.
Okay, so when you write these ideas, do you record them and just send them to Rob? You're like, this is what I have? Because like, I think I saw that in the Eagles, like, they just go on an island or whatever. I'm sure you weren't on an island, but they were just recording ideas and sending them. And did Rob hear a bunch of your ideas and pick what he liked, or how does that work? You know,
the crazy thing was I think back then it was just like we show up in a room and I'm just like, hey, I got this riff.
What songs did you get, made it on the album? Because I heard he mentioned a couple of them.
So like it started with probably the chorus of From This Day.
Oh, that's you.
That like the most of the song was written, but when it got to the chorus, it just stayed on one note, mm-hmm. and like the chords didn't change behind it. Mm-hmm. And it was my, you know, I kind of suggested the idea of like changing the chords behind it to make it sound more melodic, I guess.
Yeah.
The Blood, the Sweat, the Tears.
Oh, it's a classic. Thanks. You helped write the guitar for that?
I mean, I think, yeah, that main riff was mine. Yeah, then we kind of like, because I would bring one riff and then we would write the rest of it together, mm-hmm. as a band. Silver was...
Oh, it's like one of the best, man. I love that song.
was actually... Because before Machine Head, I played in a band called Man-Made God.
Yeah.
With some of the former members of Forbidden.
Mm, nice.
And I wrote a song, like, right before I joined Machine Head, I wrote a song... And I brought it to them, and they're like, sounds too much like Machine Head.
They said that.
Yeah. But I think we ended up using it anyways, but so it was like, so I just kind of took the riff, and I brought it, I showed it to the Machine Head guys.
What's it like being in Indigo Ranch? Were you a fan of, like, Korn when they first started, you know, like, being, they've recorded there? I mean, was it like a, were you a fan going into it, like, oh, you've done so much work talking about Ross? Were you a fan of those bands that he recorded previously?
Not really. Like, the crazy thing is, like, I was introduced to nu metal by Rob.
Like, oh, wow.
Yeah, because I was, like, I was in a weird place musically where I was listening to some metal, but I was also listening to, like, things like Radiohead and Sonic Youth and just kind of, like, random stuff. Like, I was really into a songwriting phase, so I was, mm-hmm. like... listening to great songwriters like the Eagles, Led Zeppelin and awesome. Things like that. And Rob, it was like, have you ever heard of Limp Bizkit? I'm like, nah, I never heard of him. He's like, man, you got to check this band out.
That's so funny just to hear him say, have you ever heard of Limp Bizkit? Like, yeah. That's so old, man.
Yeah, so he introduced me to all the new metal bands. And we went to a Korn show as a band. And he's like, watch this part. This whole crowd's going to jump up in the air. And I'm like, wow, that's cool, man.
Were you a Deftones fan?
Yeah, I did like the Deftones because they were from the Bay Area.
Yeah.
And my band, another band that I was in before Machine Head, we used to play shows with the Deftones before.
Oh, wow.
Before they were even signed or anything. So, like, we'd play shows in front of, like, 5 or 10 people. And those people were friends of the band.
Oh my! So you got to hang out with them and get to know them, mm-hmm. and friends with them and everything. I wish I could see footage of that. That'd be
I don't even know. Like, I mean, they would just like be riding around on skateboards and stuff. And that was before anybody had phones, so you couldn't like take movies of.
Yeah.
You know. So. Yeah, there is no footage of that. We played at this club called Berkeley Square in the Bay Area, and yeah, there was like. We played a couple shows with them where there was like 10 people there. Then the next time there was like 20, then like 50, then 100.
Oh, you just see it growing.
Yeah, you just saw it growing. And then like after they were able to pack that club, then, you know, we hear, oh, they just signed to Maverick. And it mm-hmm. was just like real quick, too. It was like a matter of like 3 or 4 months.
Oh, yeah. Madonna. Yeah. I heard she sent them posters of her naked.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I interviewed Chi's brother.
Yeah.
Ming, and he said that his brother gave him the poster, so it's in his laundry room. So,
oh wow!
But she, according, like he said, she sent the whole band just a poster of her naked.
That's like, awesome.
That's pretty awesome, man. We actually, I got something for you, man. Garrett, my new model, he replaced Nathan and Carl. But yeah, here it is. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Look at this.
Oh my God! No fucking way. And that is so amazing, man.
Oh,
thank you so much.
No problem. I'm glad you like it, man.
Yeah.
This album means like the world to me and my friends. You know, it's like a top 5 favorite albums ever.
Yeah.
Do you listen to it?
I do. It's probably one of the only albums that I listen to that I played on.
Really?
Yeah.
So when you listen to music that you played on, is it, do you like critique it? Like,
most of the time, like say for all the last band that I was in.
Thank you.
You know, there was so much. Conflict and like getting ideas shot down and negativity that went along with it. Like, I don't even like to listen to it.
Oh, okay. So you just brings back memories of like,
yeah, it's
what
just
you're
like,
doing.
Oh yeah, that song could have been so much better if, you know. Uh-huh.
That's so interesting.
And, yeah, so I listen to a lot of it that way and just think of like what it could have been or what I thought it should have been.
Yeah.
And things like that. But The Burning Red was nothing like that. Like, I mean, the whole experience was like, I would even say it was like spiritual.
Wow.
Yeah. It was like, it was like, we were all, and it's like the albums that I feel really proud about and like to listen to are the albums where the whole band was really on the same page the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And, like I still like to listen to The Burning Red. And I love listening to the new Lions at the Gate album.
Yes.
But probably between that, there's not much.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So you don't go back and listen to El Nino like some of the later albums? Or
no, not at all.
Wow.
Yeah.
We were talking, it's so interesting. We were talking yesterday, I sent you a screenshot of Rob wearing that orange jacket.
Yeah.
I love the story. Can you tell it for a minute? Like, but he wore an orange jacket in Desire to Fire, right? Is that the right video? What video did he wear?
From this day,
yes. Yeah. I'm sorry, yes.
So, like, before I joined the band, I bought that jacket at Urban Outfitters. And it was at a period in my life where I was, like, I was always buying clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, like, a jacket that I was, like, hey, Rob, you want this jacket? Like, I don't wear it anymore. And he took it, and now it's, like, this famous jacket.
Didn't you know he was going to wear it in the video?
No, not at all.
You just gave it to him, and then he shows up wearing it. Orange was such a big color back then, too. You know, it's funny how much orange people were wearing.
I mean, the crazy thing is that he still has it. Like, when you showed me that video, I was like, wow, he still has that?
Yeah, and he said it still fit and everything.
Yeah.
And you guys tour on Burning Red for a while? Like, how,
I mean, it was about a year and a half. I mean, it was it was that and Confession were the two longest touring cycles that I've done as you know, being in a band.
What's it like being the new guy in Machine Head? I mean, were people, how were the fans react to you? You know, because I know their style changed a little. I mean, were they pointing fingers maybe when they shouldn't? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
were you well received? That's what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, well, the Machine Head fan base is like a pretty, like, they love their band, and the, a lot of times they don't like change. And there was a lot of people that loved Logan, and so it was a little bit, you know, it was definitely harder becoming a new member in Machine Head than it was when I went from Machine Head to El Nino. So there was like a lot of people that didn't like the way I looked or the way I played, or thought that I had a big influence on the direction that the band decided to go in.
Yes, yeah.
So,
I mean, but you came back from a harder past, you know? I mean, you weren't this new metal kid.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
you had Rob telling you to listen to Limp Bizkit and check out the, you know?
Yeah, and, but I don't know, but at the same time, it was just such a departure from what they had done in the past. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people just associated, they're like, oh, it must be the new guy that made him do that. Like, I'm going to come into the band and I'm like, hey, no, Rob, you should rap on this part.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. That's hilarious, yeah. What's that writing experience like working with Rob and the other guys? I keep saying Rob, but the entire band. I mean, is everybody pretty open? What's the working environment like? Is it?
I mean, the crazy thing is I thought it was a lot more open and more supportive than the last band I was in.
Yeah.
So it was actually, it's like there was a lot of voting. There was a lot of like, this is cool, this is not. It wasn't any kind of like dictatorship or anything like that. I mean, Rob tries to be fair with everybody. I mean, sometimes he will like veto ideas and stuff, but for the most part, it was an open kind of experience that I felt pretty fair about.
Yeah.
Like I thought it was done fairly.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that way on the Burning Red, but then maybe on Supercharger it was a little bit less. And I think on Supercharger we were all
I got my fancy prop.
Yeah, I got your cue ready. So Supercharger was, I feel like, even though it was the same members, it was more divided. Like, everybody was kind of like, some people thought we needed to go more metal, like back to the metal roots of the band, and some people thought the band should go more, you know, even further into like a new metal type thing, and we weren't on the same page like we were with the Burning Red, and I think it kind of shows in the album. And
so you would bring it, like, not you, but somebody would bring a heavy idea and then be like, no, it's too heavy kind of thing? Like, is it?
Yeah, I mean, there was, it was just like we weren't seeing eye to eye on the direction that the band should go in. And I think it shows on the album, and like, it's not as well received as an album, and I don't like to listen to it myself.
See, I'm weird. I'm the opposite. I love this album.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just special to me. Like,
Because
I remember I was like 21, 22, so it's just, I like it. Yeah, but it's different. It's also interesting because of 9/11. I know it's been talked about a lot, but your video was like people falling off buildings, right? Has anybody seen the original? Is it like edited out? Because I know you have the video out.
Yeah, the video came out, and I don't think they had to edit that much, but it was just the concept of like the buildings crashing around you and all that stuff, and it was just like the worst possible thing that could have happened, you know. For a band anyways, like 9/11 itself was way, way worse than anything that.
Was this album out before 9/11 or did it come out?
It was like, I think we finished it and before 9/11 happened. And then when we were about to put it out and we had the plans and the video and all that, 9/11 happened. And then it was just like, you know, we couldn't.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
Did you go on tour? Was the tour delayed?
Yeah, the tour got delayed a little bit, and it ended up being, we ended up, at first we were supposed to go on tour with Power Man 5000.
Yeah.
And at the time, that would have been a huge tour for us. Mm-hmm. And so that tour got canceled or postponed or something. And we ended up going on tour with Fear Factory, nice. El Nino, and Chimera.
What was this tour called?
It was the very first Roadrunner Road Rage tour.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where I met most of the guys from El Nino. I had actually known Dave from before then. Mm-hmm. Because he was also in the Bay Area metal scene.
He was
in a band called Laz Rocket.
Oh, I'd check that out. That's cool.
So
you guys kind of hit it off, and did you, you know, I danced with Vion, but when you guys hit off, you're like, we should do something someday, or like, we should jam, or it was like little talks about that?
No, nothing like that, but so after that tour, there was... Machine Head always liked to go to Europe in the winter because at that time there's no other bands over there and there's no competition. Like, you're not competing with other shows.
Yeah.
So most of the shows are really packed, and it was just like a strategy that they had that seemed to work over the years. I'm not sure if they still do it that way, but so one of the other things that Machine Head liked to do was to introduce new bands to Europe. And I think they brought Cold Chamber at one time. Mm-hmm. And so we were having a meeting, and we had already like got the dates set up to do the tour, and we were trying to figure out what band we want to bring over. Like, what band are we going to bring over as like this, you know, new cool band?
That's super cool to do.
Yeah.
By the way.
And
do you guys vote on that too?
Yeah, it was a discussion. It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like Rob said, we're going to bring this band. And it was actually my idea to bring El Nino.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And Rob was into him? Like, everybody liked him?
Yeah, it was like, who should we bring? And I'm like, what about that El Nino band? And then everyone kind of looked at each other, and they're like, yeah, let's do that. Mm. And that was the tour that basically broke El Nino in Europe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Now, they were still touring their first album, right? Revolution?
Yeah, it was still on Revolution.
Yeah. And so you leave Machine Head. How hard was that? I mean, do you just like, if you don't feel comfortable saying that, but
I don't have a problem talking about anything.
But so, what's it like leaving Machine Head then?
I mean, when I left the band, it was kind of, you know, it's like there was things that I wasn't happy about in Machine Head, and I don't think it wasn't really because it was a bad situation. Mm-hmm. It was because I was naive, and I thought like that there should be like, I don't know, there, like when you're in a relationship with somebody, it's like you know, you're not going to agree on everything, and you have to do the work.
Yeah.
But I guess at the time I was like just thinking that there should be a soulmate as far as musicians, like just because we had problems at the time, I thought that was a bad thing. But now that I'm older and wiser, I realize that that's kind of just, that's the case with everything. And you got to work those out. And that's what builds.
Wow, good point.
Yeah. You know what, that's what builds a relationship. So I was kind of naive in the fact that because we had problems, that wasn't a good situation. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing was, I wanted to seek that by doing another project or a side project, and Rob didn't want me to do any
other things.
So then it was just got.
Wow,
to
this. That reminds me of Metallica so much, man.
Yeah,
like Jason Newsted wanted to do other stuff.
pretty much, and that was kind of like his blueprint for the band. It's like Metallica was successful, so like let's do things like Metallica, you know. If we follow that path, then we'll be successful as well.
Right.
So that was one of their rules, is like, you know, if you're in Metallica, you can't do side projects, or you can't find musical fulfillment outside of the band.
That'd be funny if he did the same line as James, like, you're not going to make t-shirts, right? Because he told Jason Newsted that.
Oh, is that what it, I don't know the details of it, but
it was on the classic albums. Like, he's like, you got a new band, right? You guys going to be selling t-shirts? He goes, yeah. He's like, you know, you can be replaced. The t-shirts thing was funny to me. Like, anyway.
Yeah, so it was, it came down to that. Basically, like, well, I'm not completely musically fulfilled in Machine Head, and I want to do other stuff. And he was like, well, you can't be a Machine Head and do other things. Then
man, that's so cut and dry too, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't be in this band if you do anything else.
And I don't think he's that way anymore.
Yeah.
But it was just that, I mean, we were young and we were, you know, young musicians with egos and.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Definitely, I know that it was just young egos, basically.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I'm sure young, if man. At this stage in our lives, if the same thing would have happened, it would have just been like, you know, we would have been able to figure it out like normal people.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was a mixture of having a problem and not knowing how to deal with it when you're that age, I think.
And how long did it take before you connected with El Nino? I mean, was this kind of instant, like?
Not really. So I did try to do my own band for about a year.
Oh, okay.
What
was it called?
I don't think we had a name
okay.
at the time, but we were writing music, and I felt like the people that I was playing with weren't, you know, it was like, I felt like I had to push them because they weren't motivated enough on their own. Mm-hmm. And it got to the point where I was just really frustrated with, like, I'm like, you know, you guys have a chance to play with somebody that's actually done things and you're not like putting in the effort.
Mm-hmm.
And,
God, it must have been such a hard time, you know, like leaving Machine Head and then this thing not working out.
Yeah.
You must have been like really frustrated in general.
Well, it was, I mean, I think I was still planning on trying to make it happen. And then I got a call from Dave from El Nino, and he's just like, you know, Mark Rizzo just left. Do you want to try out? And, you know, I gave it some thought, and like, I wasn't sure if I wanted to get into somebody else's band again.
Yeah.
So, but at the same time, I wasn't sure if I wanted to play with people that weren't dedicated. And so after about 3 days, I called him back and I said, yeah, okay. Let's do this.
What's tryout like when you're trying now? I mean, like, they're like, play this song, and you just, you know, they give you some songs to learn or something?
Yeah, they just, they told me what songs to learn. It was the same with Machine Head, like.
Oh, yeah.
So they.
Is that nerve-wracking, like, when you're trying out?
I mean, the first 6 months I was in Machine Head, I was just like, I was anxiety.
Yeah. It's such a different experience.
Yeah, I mean, because I learned the songs. And I was practicing them like probably like 14 hours a day.
Wow.
And I mean, because once I decided that I wanted to do it, I also decided that nobody else is going to get this spot except me. So I'm just going to like put in the work and make sure that there's no doubt that I can get the position.
Nice.
So
you did this with El Nino as well? Like,
yeah, even though I knew my chances were a lot higher with El Nino just because I had a history, I still didn't want to leave anything to chance.
Yeah.
So I just rehearsed the song. The crazy thing was, like, I was living, when I was rehearsing for the El Nino songs, I was rehearsing the same thing about like 10, 12 hours a day. And right below me, my friend Steve Antonopoulos was practicing for Static X.
Oh, wow.
And so I could hear Static X songs below me, and I'm sure you could hear the Machine or the El Nino songs above. And I ended up getting into El Nino, but he didn't make it into Static X.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And man, this is like, I said Burning Red's in my top five. This is probably my top five too.
Oh, I mean, wow. That's so insane.
I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
No Confession. This is my favorite one by far.
I love that album. To be honest, I didn't contribute much to that one.
Okay. So they had everything.
They had most of it done and before I came in. So, and I was a fan of El Nino myself because, like, you know, from touring with them and knowing them, like, I learned, I loved the first album.
Yes.
And
did you listen to them before, like when they had the different singer?
No.
Yeah, that's like real old.
Yeah, that's really old. Like I first heard of them when we did that Road Rage tour.
Oh, okay, yes.
So that's when I started like hearing them live, and I was like, wow, I like this. And then you know, I started playing the album. I got the album, and that's why I had the idea to bring them to Europe, just because I was a big fan of my.
I remember thinking it was so cool seeing you from Machine Head to here. I was like, I mean, that meant the world. I was like, I love this band. Like,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So you didn't, how long did you guys record this for? Was this a long process?
I came in at the end of it. Like, it was mostly done, and
you just added a guitar and it was,
yeah, I just added a couple of guitar things, and
yeah,
but for the most part, that was, I didn't have much to do with the writing of that album.
Mm-hmm. I love the single. I'm trying to remember which single. I mean,
How Can I Live?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. And this one too. This Time's For Real. That was on there too, right?
Yeah, that was on Confession.
Oh, yeah. But How Can I Live? And yeah, it's so good, man.
Yeah.
This Time's For Real. This song was on, I printed this out, by the way. This was on the Freddy soundtrack, right? Freddy Versus?
The other one was. How Can I Live was.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, one of them. That's so cool. It made the soundtrack, man.
Yeah, that was really cool. I mean, like, I'm a huge horror fan. And,
yes.
Like, stepping into that, and we're doing the video, like, on the actual, like, the Elm Street.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, like in on Universal. I don't know what it's called, but it's like where they do a lot of shooting and stuff.
Freddy wasn't in your video though, right?
No.
That would be trippy if he showed up with a glove or something.
Yeah, that'd be crazy.
Yeah, man, this album is so good, dude. I remember listening to it from start to finish. It was just all killer. I loved it, man.
I love that. I love the first two albums.
So you said you listened to Confessions and Burning Red, right? Mm-hmm. Or every once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, I listened to Confession, I think, more because I'm listening to it as a fan, because I wasn't involved with most of it, so it was kind of more something that I wasn't part of that I could listen to as a fan.
Yeah,
but I don't think I listen to them now though.
Right? Did you guys when you joined El Nino? Did you guys ever cross paths with Machine Head on tour?
Yeah, a couple times we played festivals.
Was that weird? I mean, did you keep in contact with any of the guys in the band?
Well, when I left the band, it was like Heart Feelings. It was like, it probably took about 10 years before Rob and I started talking again.
Were you talking to anybody else in the band?
Yeah, when I was in the band, Dave McLean and I were like best friends.
Oh, that's cool.
So I was still good friends with him. And I still chat with him every once in a while. Like when I think I saw Sacred Reich's first show with Dave.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was in Denver. And I went out to hang out with him.
Dude, I gotta get him on the show, man.
He's a great guy, man. He's funny, and he's just got a good heart.
Yeah, that's great. And so, this album too, man. I love this album. Your follow up to Confession. Did you write a lot more on this?
I wrote a lot on that one, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, and.
Do you write on tour? Like you have riffs on the bus and stuff?
I try to. Sometimes it's really distracting because there's nowhere to go without, you know, people trying to party or whatever.
Yeah.
So.
You guys never had women on the bus or nothing like that. You know? I went one time, this girl I was dating, I was at an El Nino show.
Yeah.
And I went to the bathroom, and then when I came back, she goes, yeah, they this roadie guy gave me like this backstage pass and said I could come on backstage.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And but your boyfriend can't come. That was pretty funny, man.
Yeah, that was, I mean, actually on the Burning Red, I would say I was single during most of that album cycle. Mm-hmm. And that was the closest thing I ever had to like the Motley Crue experience.
Really?
Yeah.
So there's like women at the Burning, like on at your shows, man.
Yeah, it was pretty insane.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's when you made it, like when you have women at the show. You know?
Yeah. I mean,
if you go to a Chimera show, there's not that many women.
Yeah.
Or used to.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, because that whole album cycle was like the new metal, and
yeah, it was huge.
It was more of a, you know, there was a look along with it, and so it was a crazy time too. Like all those bands were really doing good. So it was, I would say it was the time in music that was closest to those like Motley Crue days.
Yeah, man. Yeah. That's crazy to think. So yeah, this album is great. I was listening to it the other day, man.
Yes.
Great follow up to that.
I do think there's some great songs on there. One of my favorites on there, it's like, I'm so bad with song names, even
there. Me too. I'm trying to think of them now, and I'm blanking.
Damn, what's the name of it? It's that slow one.
Was it a single?
No, it didn't end up being a single, but I thought it should have been. Man.
This is going to hit you like tonight, later on.
Yeah, like, this is like...
You're going to randomly just say it out loud.
But
we'll have to go back and check it out.
Yeah, there's a slow song. I can't even remember the name.
I know it too. I know every song on this album.
I think a lot of it might have to do with like, probably my mind is just blocking a lot of that part of my life out of it.
Were you guys getting along right here on this album?
For the most part, but there was definitely, it wasn't as like the Confession whole touring cycle was like more of, we were all gelling and, it was like harmonious and I guess that stuff happens when there's a lot of success.
Yeah.
So everyone's happy and the shows were big and all of that stuff. So everybody was kind of happy. And this album, I think it sold about a quarter of what Confession sold.
And there's pressure on this album.
Yeah,
too,
there's pressure.
I wonder why. So that's crazy, man.
Yeah. So it wasn't as smooth, I would say.
And nu metal kind of like when the early or the later 2000s, it kind of took a dip, right? Was nu metal? I'm not saying this nu metal, but I guess I'm wondering if the styles changed. Like, are you guys trying to get heavier on this album?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, Killswitch had just come out.
Yeah. All those bands I remember started getting really heavy.
Yeah, and like our record label's like, you guys got to do something like this.
Oh, you know, were they?
This is what's going on now. So
that's interesting.
So there's us. You know, we're starting to get add a little metalcore influence at that time.
Mm-hmm.
With songs like Violent Saint and some of the other songs.
I love that opening song. This Means War.
This Is War, yeah.
Yeah, this is so good, dude.
Yeah, that was one of my songs.
Oh, was it? That's so cool, man.
But yeah, I contributed tons on this album.
Yeah.
And then after, I guess we can go in succession because I see the other.
Oh, yeah, man. This, I told Christian on the show, I was like, nobody ever talks about this album. Like,
yeah.
That's my goal. Let's just talk about it. We can do all of this on this.
Yeah, that was a fun one. My wife at the time was pregnant, so I was actually home for part of it, and then I came in, you know, a little bit later. And they had done a lot of stuff already, and you know, I thought it was really cool. I loved, you know, being a fan of the Deftones, and
dude,
you know,
it's like one of my favorite bands.
Yeah. So
you worked with Chino.
Yeah. Huh?
Is he in the studio right next? Like, you guys all working?
I wasn't there on the same day, so.
Oh man, yeah. I've been super bummed if I missed the Chino day.
Yeah, but it was cool to hear, and the song came out really good.
Yeah, it's amazing. Zombie Eaters.
Mm-hmm. Zombie Eaters.
And the other Peter Gabriel song was great too.
Oh, Red Rain, yeah.
Red Rain, yeah.
Yeah.
How do you guys pick Red Rain? Whose idea was that?
It might have been our producer at the time, Eddie's, but I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I don't even know. But I know that he likes Peter Gabriel.
Yeah, man, I like the whole vibe of this. It's kind of interesting. Like, why did you guys do this album for? I mean, is it like, did the record company suggest it?
That was our first thing that we did for this label that we were on called Cement Shoes for a while. Which I mean, we were only.
Oh, so this
on
is
it.
After Roadrunner was the last one. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that was the last Roadrunner album.
Mm-hmm. Wow, and, man, that's huge. That not working with Roadrunner. Was that good? Like, were you?
No, I mean, it was like the going with Cement Shoes was like such a horrible idea.
Are they still around?
I doubt it.
I've never heard of them.
And even like you should have even thought like with a name like Cement Shoes is like, are you gonna float?
It does not sound successful. Cement Shoes. Oh man, that's good. And I remember asking Christian, like, did they ever, you guys ever do the songs live, the Zombie Eaters? I think he said no.
Yeah, we never did.
Yeah, this seems like a pretty crazy song to play live.
Yeah,
pretty scary.
And Logan Mader mixed that.
Did he really?
Yeah.
So you're friends with him? I mean, do you know Logan?
I know him, yeah. I mean, we knew each other. Like, he was from the Bay Area scene as well, so I knew him before Machine Head as well.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. That's crazy. I'd love to have Logan on the show too, man. That dude's ripped, dude. Like, if I interviewed him, I'd be like, you got to take your shirt off, right? His shirt's off like 90% of the time, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is where, like, these last few El Nino albums were kind of where I... admittedly, I kind of stopped listening to him as much.
Yeah, me too.
But I have to say that. Oh, yeah. I have to say it because my last interview, they're like, you didn't say nothing about these albums. So I do listen to them. And I like this album.
I think that this one was really experimental. Like, I think everybody was just kind of like, and it was, like I was saying, it's like nobody was on the same page with this album. Some people wanted to go more Latin. Some people wanted to go more experimental and progressive.
Wow.
And some people wanted to, you know, have some hit singles. So God, it was,
man,
just like,
crazy.
Yeah, pulling everybody's in different directions. And I don't, like, I personally don't listen to that album. I mean, actually, unfortunately now, I probably don't listen to any of the El Niño stuff anymore. But even while I was in El Niño, I probably didn't listen to anything after...
The underground.
Yeah.
So when you're not inspired like that, is it hard to come up with ideas? I mean, is it hard to, when you're not inspired, if you're not digging what's coming? I mean, did you have any songs on here that you did?
Yeah.
That's a weird question. I'm just wondering, like, when you're writing guitar riffs or something you're not inspired for, is that hard to do?
It isn't, because, I mean, I've done it, like, sometimes... it's not hard to do. It's just, I don't think it comes out as good, and it's not as sincere, and it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
So I did contribute. I can't even remember off the bat what.
Did you guys still have the same record guys? The
Yeah, this is Cement Shoes.
Cement Shoes. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And this album was like a financial disaster. Like,
was it?
Yeah, we got a lot of money to record this album, but. We were in Los Angeles paying for like apartments at the Oakwoods, and the album ended up taking like 6 months, and it was just like this long, drawn out, I don't know, mess.
We should listen to this album after this interview.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding, dude. And then Dead New World?
That was the first album that we did on our own.
So you left the other, I keep forgetting their name.
Yeah, Cement Shoes.
Cement Shoes is the hardest thing to remember.
So we got
right
rid
now.
Of the Cement Shoes.
No Cement Shoes.
I mean, we went to Victory, but we actually produced, it was self-produced. So we recorded the whole, this was the first album we did recording, because we're all kind of producers.
Yeah, I know you. Yeah, and you're into that. That's
awesome. And Christian as well.
Oh, cool.
And so we recorded this one on our own, basically, and self-produced it. And I think it has some good moments on it, but at the same time, the first time you do something like that on your own, it's not going to be as good as it could be.
Yeah.
Then we started self-producing after that, and I think they started getting a little bit better each time.
Yeah, man, you guys were together full-time. I mean, producing, writing, everything.
Yeah.
And all living together? You said you're all living together?
Well, we would record the albums on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up having to be in New Jersey for, you know, months at a time. And it was hard for me because at the time I had a, you know, little girl and I was married. And so it was hard for me to be away from my family, to be in, you know, these arguments and, you know, all this kind of stuff like that. So,
And you're on, like, when you're touring, you're like on a bus and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's gotta be rough leaving your daughter and all that, you know? I mean, I have two kids, I can imagine.
Yeah, it was really hard when she was at the age where I couldn't tell her that I wasn't gonna be there in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's just like I was saying goodnight to her and she didn't know that I wasn't gonna be there.
That's so sad, man. That's gonna be rough.
Yeah, that was that's the hardest part of touring.
Mm-hmm. And then, I'm missing one of your albums too, the family, the last one. I missed the props, but we can talk about this one. Yeah, so this is your follow up right here.
Yeah, that one was. I think it was a little bit like we improved the process a little bit, and we got better at doing our own albums. And
so you did this album too.
Yeah. So that one was.
When's the last time you listened to this one?
All of these later albums, I probably only listened to like maybe once or twice after we did them.
How does Christian feel about them too? I wonder if he listens. I should ask him that, but I wonder if he listens to them, you know.
I don't think so.
In the band likes it? You know, like there's got to be one guy in the band that likes it, you know.
Yeah.
But, okay.
I mean, I don't want to, like, I mean, there's definitely moments on there that I'm proud of, and mm-hmm. and we did put a lot of work into all of these. It's just maybe there's just, and I don't want to say they're bad, you know, because yeah. I'm sure lots of people love them.
But, and I don't mean to any disrespect on it, because I was listening to it too, and it's heavy. I got to check it out. I got to listen to it more. That's what I got to do.
I guess it's just, it's hard for me to listen to it, you know. Mm-hmm. So,
and the band breaks up. I mean, that's such a weird thing. I don't know much about when you guys left. There was another album after this too.
Yeah, the last one, Till Death La Familia, yes. is the one that I started. That's the one that I do like more than most of these. Mm-hmm. And I ended up, it was because we were doing sound waves in Australia. And we just got word from our label that we got the Mayhem tour. Mm. But they said, you have it, but you need to have a new album out. And we had like 3 months.
You know? Do you have any songs at the time? Or is it?
Zero songs.
Oh, man.
So I basically locked myself in my studio. And I was literally like probably like 2 months straight with maybe 1 or 2 days off. Mm-hmm. Like 16 hours a day, just writing music, and even when I was dry, like I didn't have any ideas, I would just do things to force it. Like first I tried like massive amounts of caffeine, and then alcohol, and you know, just like,
which one's the best, caffeine or alcohol?
None of them really worked. Oh, yeah. It's kind of like, I don't know. It's sometimes when you need to get ideas out, sometimes mm-hmm. it's hard to, but. Somehow we got it done. And I think I literally spent about, I did the calculations before, and I think it was something like 800 hours, like within a 3 month period, like putting, and that one, Till Death La Familia, I think I wrote most of that one.
Are you seeing your family like at this time? I mean, that's gotta be hard too.
Just seeing my daughter at night, and you know, not getting to spend time with her, and then going on tour right afterwards. You know?
How old's your daughter now?
15.
Oh wow!
But yeah. My daughter is transgender, so okay. It's my son now.
Oh okay.
Yeah.
Was he driving now?
No, he's got his permit, but not. We've driven a couple times, and he still has a long ways to go.
I was such a horrible driver at that age. I mean,
yeah.
Was anybody a good driver at 15?
He said he was.
They should require people to wear helmets or something, like in the car or something. Yeah. Like some kind of.
I mean,
extra.
I definitely felt like I wanted one.
Yeah, I got a 9-year-old and a 10-year-old, so 15 is kind of around the corner.
Yeah.
Lions at the Gate. So how long was the break after El Nino? What did you do after you left?
So we were, we were going through a court battle, and we were kind of...
The camp's kind of divided, right?
Yeah, the camp's divided, and we're fighting a battle in like multiple territories. I think we had a court battle going in Los Angeles, one in New York, one in Texas, and one in Germany. All about for different things having to do with it. And it just got to a point where it was so, you know, the expenses were so much. We mm-hmm. were just like, you know, I don't think we can keep this going. So yeah. We agreed on like a financial settlement. And at the time, it seemed like the worst thing in the world mm-hmm. that we were like, losing, like that we're no longer going to be part of El Nino and not be able to continue and you know, everything that went along with that. But now looking back on it, it's like the best thing that could have ever happened.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you really weren't, you wanted to stay with El Nino, mm-hmm. I guess. Yeah. In the break, when did you get the phone call for Lions at the Gate? Because you were telling me like they reached out to you, right?
Yeah, it was probably about 6 months later, I think.
What did you do for that 6 months? Like nothing?
I mean, I have a business, and I was focusing on that and just doing other musical things for other people. Like I was doing some ghostwriting, and I was doing some producing.
That's
and things
cool,
like that.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know you did that ghostwriting thing.
Yeah, that's so really yeah, sometimes people hire me to write things. And
So are you on albums that nobody knows it's you kind of thing?
A little bit.
Oh, yeah. That's funny. I wonder if you had to sign, like, something, you know, you can't say who.
I mean, they're not like huge bands or anything. Most of them are like, you know, smaller bands that do some touring and things like that.
Do you ever have bands that, like, their guitar player can't do something on the guitar and they call you and you record it and do it for them, kind of thing?
I mean, early on, yeah, like when I'm producing bands, that happens sometimes. Like, there might be, you know, somebody in the band that doesn't have a lot of experience, so especially experience recording. So I get to a point where I'm just like, okay, that's good. And then, you know, after they leave,
You do it?
Yeah.
That's hilarious. I love that.
And, but most of the time, you know, like, I try to get them to do it. Like, one of those things that I do with bands is like, is I put the fear of like getting sent home.
Oh, you do?
I'm like, if you don't play that right, I'm gonna send you home.
You're like the Simon Cowell, dude. Like, you're the mean judge.
So, I would rather just get them to practice it and mm-hmm. and you know, come back and be able to play it, and it works out better for everybody that way. But there have been you know, times where that wasn't an option. And
do you remember like when Bob Rock was like, he told Kurt, he was like, you gotta do your homework. He's like, I do my homework. It just doesn't work. It's on the Black Album. That's kind of remind me of
Yeah,
that.
It's the same thing. It's like a lot of times, you know, all you have to do is practice the part and, you know, you can play it better. And some people just don't